Welcome back to the Inside Pass, News24's daily dedicated Rugby World Cup podcast. My name is Lloyd Bernard, and joining me in studio today in Cape Town once again is Herman Mostert. And we are up and running at Rugby World Cup 2023, and what a weekend it was. I don't know about you, Herman, but I watched every single minute of World Cup rugby available to me over the weekend. Some really good viewing. How was yours?
Hi, Lloyd. Yes, pretty much the same as yours. A lot of rugby, a lot of hours in. yeah, and some interesting results over the weekend, first weekend.
We saw France beat the All Blacks in Friday's opener, followed by England knocking over Argentina on Saturday, and then, of course, on Sunday, the Springboks with an 18-3 victory over Scotland. Let's start with that game, Herman. It was always considered a slippery one for the Boks, you know, given that pool, what's been dubbed the pool of death, you know, certainly in the sense of having three strong teams. The Boks obviously also pooled alongside Ireland, which made this one a very tricky one. Scotland number five in the world, and I suppose the win was the most important thing. But if we look at performance, what did you make of it? I mean, were you pleased with what you saw? If you had to score the Springboks out of 10 based on what you saw yesterday, where would you be?
Yeah, I was pretty pleased with the performance. It was a workmanlike effort. If I have to give a total, I would say around about 6.5 out of 10. Nothing spectacular, but they got the job done. You know, they did what they do well. They dominated Scots up front, physically overpowered them. The scrums obviously were the platform was laid up front in the scrums for the Boks to dominate. And yeah, the result was never for me really in doubt. Even though they only led 6-3 at halftime, it was Scotland never really looked like they could score. I can't recall one moment in the game where I thought, "Geez, the Scots are going to get close to scoring a try here." You know, they only got one penalty on the stroke of halftime, which was supposed to maybe give them a little bit of a boost because they'd been dominated the whole first half and then suddenly only trailed by 3 points. Mm-hmm. But then the Springboks came back with a bang in those first 10 minutes after the break and scored two tries, and yeah, and it was over from there. There's no ways the Scots were going to come back after trailing by more than 10 points.
Yeah, the threat of Finn Russell that we spoke so much about in the week almost completely extinguished. It was a very impressive South African defensive display. The clean sheet, obviously, and a great way to start a World Cup campaign when you keep out the number five ranked side in the world without scoring any tries. What did you make of that defensive effort? It was pretty good.
Yeah, look, it's almost a bit of a traditional type of rush defense that the Boks use, and they really shut the Scots down completely. Like I said, it never looked like they would come close to scoring a try. And it's obviously a very well-structured, well-organized defense. You know, Jock Nienaber is renowned as a defense guru. Before he became a head coach, he was a defense guru at the Box and at the Stormers and at the Cheetahs alongside Rusty for many years. So that's sort of the cornerstone of his coaching philosophy. And it was on display on Sunday again. And I'm sure they pride themselves on not conceding a try. Obviously, they probably would have liked to have scored a few more, but it's the first game of a World Cup, you know, and Scotland, like you said, they're number five in the world. You know, they ran France close. They beat France in Murrayfield just before the World Cup and then ran them close in France the next weekend. So they're not a bad side. And, you know, a lot of Scottish pundits and a lot of British pundits have said that this is the best Scotland team that's ever gone to a Rugby World Cup. So the way the Springboks just shut them out completely and never looked like they could lose the game is pretty impressive.
Talk about individual performances that stood out for you. You know, it was hard to find anyone on the field that actually had a bad game, and I think Rob Howing's player ratings after the match reflected as much. You know, maybe Frans Malherber got done at a couple of scrums there towards the back end of the first half, but outside of that, everyone was largely impressive. Who stood out for you on the day? Herman, I think for me, you know, Peter Steph Du Toit's performance was just monstrous. What about you?
Yeah, I also, in my Talking Points article that I wrote, which is going to be published pretty soon on News 24, I also mentioned Peter Steph Du Toit as a standout player. I wrote that he's now getting close to being back to the form that made him the World Rugby Player of the Year 4 years ago when we won the World Cup in Japan. He obviously has been struggling with injuries in recent times and maybe hasn't performed as well as we've come to accustomed for him to play. And he really put in a solid performance, physically overpowering performance, if you can call it that. You know, the try that he scored, he showed his power in barging over the line. I thought Jasper Wiesel also had a good game. There were some, I wouldn't say concerns, but it was a bit of a talking point that he started ahead of Dwayne Vermeulen, but I think he imposed himself really well and was part of you know, the Bok pack that just, for me, just overpowered Scotland physically. And obviously, out wide, Moni Libok received the official man of the match accolade. And he had a good game. You know, the try that Curtly Orange has scored was a brilliant piece of individual skill from Moni. That the cross kick that he made, it was a no-look cross kick. He didn't, if you look at the replay, he didn't even look where he was kicking it. He was looking, I think, straight ahead, and he kicked it, obviously, to the side. So that he was a standout player. Obviously, his goal kicking was an issue again. I felt he just takes a bit too long in his whole build up and everything. He just takes too long, and then as soon as you start doing that, then you there's things that go through your head. You can start thinking a bit too much about what can go wrong. I think he just needs to keep it simple and just keep his head down and follow through quickly and just get the whole motion of going through it quicker, because it could become an issue later in the tournament if he's going to miss kicks like that again.
One thing with Marnie that you're never short of is confidence. It was fantastic watching him lining one up from about 56, 58 meters there and falling just short, but absolutely had a stunning game. You know, away from the kicking tee. We're going to be crossing to Kaniso Chwaku, who's our News 24 correspondent in Toulon shortly. Before we do, Herman, let's just touch on a couple of the other games. I mean, geez, that Fiji heartbreak last night was a lot. They came so close to pulling off what would have been surely one of the great Rugby World Cup comebacks. We saw France make that statement in the opening game against the All Blacks, and we saw the George Ford kicking masterclass against Argentina. What else stood out for you outside of South Africa this weekend? What stood out for you from the other fixtures?
Well, I think for me, obviously, George Ford reminding us a bit of what Yanni De Beer did to England in 1999 when he kicked 5 drop goals. And those 3 that Ford kicked, was all 3 of them were in pretty quick succession, and it was pretty impressive, the skill. When, I mean, one drop goal was from almost 50 meters out, and it just sort of came out of the blue. But I think Argentina's lack of discipline also stood out for me. I mean, they were playing against 14 men, with Tom Curry being sent off with a red card.
Yeah.
Even before the game, people were talking about Argentina should win this because England were dreadful in their build-up towards the World Cup. Mm. I mean, losing to Fiji at home. and then Argentina go and everything seemingly go their way, and then they just don't play. You know, they just concede penalty after penalty, and they didn't really bring much with ball in hand. So that was really disappointing from an Argentine perspective. If there was one chance that they would have to beat England at a World Cup on a stage like this, this was their chance, and they blew it completely. And talking about disappointments, I think New Zealand were also very disappointing. Just the manner in which the sort of the lack of intent that they showed. You know, they were just kicking so many balls away. I've never seen a New Zealand team kick as aimlessly as they did on Friday against France. Beauden Barrett played one of his worst games that I've seen him play. You know, they just seemingly didn't know what to do with ball in hand. So, but credit to France, you know, they stepped up to the occasion. Normally, like I said last week, they a team that sometimes struggle when the expectations are really high and there's a massive crowd and they're at home, they can falter quickly, but they didn't. They stepped up really well, and credit to them.
Right, I think we're ready to cross over to Toulon, where we have Kaniso Chwaku, who was at a couple of rugby games this weekend, England, Argentina, and South Africa, Scotland, both at the Velodrome, and we were all very jealous indeed. Good morning, Trucks.
Good morning, guys.
Are you well?
I'm good. Look, it's recovering from this weekend is something else. We're not going to have this kind of weekend we had where we've got one town hosting a double header. So if this was the way the World Cup wanted to start, well, it started a nice party. It's just a case of another tournament sustaining that momentum.
Trucks has been working long, long hours. I hope you're getting your rest. Trucks, is still a long, long tournament to go. But let's talk about the weekend. I mean, just firstly, give us a sense of what that Velodrome was like, you know, on Saturday and on Sunday, that England-Argentina game on Saturday, just massive. And then, you know, it looked like there were so many Springbok fans there on Sunday. I mean, it must have been a really special environment and atmosphere to be part of.
No, it was. If you think about it, the reason why the Bok coaches are using disco lights is to actually try be able to communicate particular things, the medical issues, without having to use the miking up, which they need to use for technical reasons. Remember that the Velodrome back in the day didn't have a roof. If you remember back to the 98 World Cup where Bafana played, then 2007, 2002, when the Boks also played there, 2001, 2002, in 2007, the stadium didn't have a roof. And one of the issues was that it was very unfriendly for fans because there's very strong winds that blow through the Mediterranean that make it so uncomfortable. So there was a commitment to put a roof over a dome over the ground. And what that dome has done, it has amplified the noise significantly. So when there's a buzz, you should have to take your headphones off so that your head rings. It's difficult to even think. That's how loud the stadium gets. So you can imagine now if you are the coach and you now need to, you're on the ground, you're trying to relay messages. It is absolutely so difficult. I mean, remember that France weren't even playing here. And when those French fans get that whistle going, it is absolutely delirious. So, look, it's a mind-blowing experience. What I just found weird was that with the Bok game, there were 400 more fans as compared to the England game, but there was far less of the traffic chaos that was part of the England-Argentina game. But it was very, both atmospheres on both days are absolutely insane.
I was going to ask about that. We read reports over the weekend of, you know, crowd control issues in the sense of getting into the stadium. None of that on Sunday. The South African fans handling their pre-match brandies and cokes well on their way into the stadium.
I'm not sure if you can get brandy and coke in France, but look, I think also though you've got different. It's a different set of fans altogether. I mean, Argentine fans are combustible. England rugby fans, less so than the soccer group, but they're also prone to being combustible. But I think they were patient enough. I think also South African fans are a lot more tolerant of slightly shabby treatment in South Africa when it comes to stadium management and stadium entry. So I think also the organizers quickly learned that the quicker you open the gate, the better, because fans want to file in, they want to get into the ground, they want to occupy their seats, they want to buy their beer. So I think there was a marked difference in how the fans in the Argentina game as compared to England-Argentina as compared to South Africa, Scotland's game were handled. So yesterday, I mean, even by the time I got to the stadium, at 12, already they were actually cleaning up, opening the testing, opening the gates. So when I got back 2 hours before kickoff, there wasn't a crowd. They were already filtering into the stadium, so they didn't allow fans to bunch up and mess up like they did for the Argentina-England game.
Right. Trucks, just talk to us about one of the talking points to come out of yesterday's game and a slight concern, hopefully not a serious concern, but Eben Etzebeth obviously leaving the field. What's the word on the ground there from within and around the camp? How concerned should South Africans be around the fitness of Eben Etzebeth and that shoulder?
Eben didn't specify which shoulder it was, but it was his left shoulder. He didn't look too uncomfortable yesterday when he spoke to us in the mix zone. He did say that he injured himself during a carry, and he tried to shake it up a bit, but he realized that he couldn't, so actually came off. One needs to remember that Eben did have a shoulder injury that ruled him out of URC duty. But there is a press conference at 12 where we will most probably find out what the extent of the injury is, even though one would feel in a car like Eben anyway was going to be taken or was going to take a break for the finals game against Romania. Jacques Denaba did say that he wasn't able to give an accurate assessment because the players are assessed for in the hour and a half after the game to check how serious the injuries are. So we will most probably have a clearer idea of how serious injury is. But look, the fact that he wasn't in a sling when he came off most probably was a positive indicator. If he wasn't a sling, I think if it was slinged up, I think it would have been a bit of a different story. So no sling, I think most probably will miss Romania with the view of being rested and ready for Ireland, but we will know after 12 o'clock.
Hey, Trucks, if I can just come in there. Obviously, another talking point from the game was the Jesse Creel incident where his high hit on the Scotland number 8, Dempsey. Coach Gregor Townsend was quite upset about it in the post-game presser, saying maybe Creel should have maybe even got a red card. Maybe he was lucky because he didn't even get a yellow card for that. What's your views on that, and how was the general feeling in the press box around that decision? And is there still maybe the threat that Creel could get cited for that?
Look, it happened quite quickly. I wasn't aware of what time it happened, so I was kind of caught by surprise when they asked. When I quickly checked the replay, look, at the most, a yellow card would have been a fair call, because at the end of the day, Jesse Creel had the responsibility to keep his head down in the tackle. If you realize that Tom Curry was sent off for was yellow card, then subsequently sent off for a similar offense. But an interesting part that the Townsend raised was that whether the box are down to 14, it wouldn't have made any difference, would have remained to be seen, because England beat Argentina with 14 minutes in the field after Kyrie was sent off. But you also need to realize that they lost the flag. When it's never would have lost an outside center, that was critical to the defensive operation. So I think it would have had a different outcome in this game, considering how good Scotland's backs are. There was a bit of consternation about it. The block management didn't make too much about it because, well, knowing the term rugby incidences and how broad that term is, you don't know what is a rugby incident in one game. In one game, you don't know what varies from a rugby incident in one movement to being a rugby movement in the next movement, in the next movement. If you remember that Juan Cruz Marila wasn't carded against South Africa for that hit on Grant Williams, whereas they cited and suspended. So I think that's also something that you need to keep following up with all the rugby. But I think what you realize is also World Rugby can and will be reactive. If a particular coach kicks up a stick over an incident that actually happened, we wouldn't be surprised if World Rugby then would actually cite Jesse Creel for what transpired on Sunday with Jack Dempsey.
Trucks, you've got a press conference to prepare for, so we'll let you go shortly. But before we do, just give us a sense of what the Springbok movement is over the next few days. Obviously, Romania in Bordeaux on Sunday, but in Toulon currently. Where will they be? How will they be spending the next couple of days in preparing for Romania?
So I think today's off. They're back at training tomorrow. They've got a press conference today, press conference tomorrow, and training. They've made a change changed though on the schedule where they've actually, I think they're training at the Mile here on Thursday. I did think leaving a bit later for Bordeaux for their game on Sunday. I think they were aiming to stay as late as they can here, going for the game, have let the captains run on the one training session and the captains run Friday, Saturday, and then play on Sunday, then jet to, then move off to Paris on Sunday. So from the change made here, they are going to stay an extra day here, prepare here, then go have captains run in Bordeaux, then play on Sunday.
Kaniso Chwaku, News 24 sports reporter in Toulon and France for the remainder of South Africa's stay at the Rugby World Cup. Thank you very much, Trucks. Mostert, back to you. Let's talk about that Romania game on Sunday. You would expect South Africa to ring the changes for that one. Some of the fringe guys getting a run out there. I mean, you know, it's obviously a long tournament. Do you think we'll see wholesale changes for that one?
Yeah, you could probably expect wholesale changes. I think it's a game that they can afford to experiment. You know, like Chuck said, now it's a bit, there's no ways they should play it's a bit if in that game if he's got an injury niggle, so he'll be ready hopefully for Ireland in 2 weeks time. And I mean, Romania, they got thumped 82-8 by Ireland, so that's pretty much says that they shouldn't really be a threat for the Springboks. But you know, the Boks have shown with the squad that they've picked, and they've shown it in their warm-up games, that it's not in the old days where, if you look at past World Cups, the Springbok sort of, if you can call it the dirt tracker or the midweek team, always tend to struggle a little bit. But this team has shown that they've got a lot of depth, and they shouldn't have any problems, even if they don't pick their strongest team, which they won't. You know, they'll make changes, and some of the frontline guys won't be playing. I wouldn't be surprised to see Skipper Kolisi also rested. And yeah, like it wouldn't make sense to go and play the same team that you would want to play Ireland the next week, because obviously the Ireland game is a big game.
Yeah.
And there shouldn't be any issues in if they make wholesale changes.
Before we go, Herman, we have to talk about one of the burning issues of the weekend. And we could tell from our readers' comments on our site that South Africans were very upset at the kit that the Springboks wore on Sunday. Blue, turquoise, I think the official colour is jade, somewhere there. But, you know, it's one of those things where, look, it is a very, you know, different kit that you would expect to see in a Springbok team. And if I'm honest, you know, when I first saw it myself, wasn't the biggest fan. What I will say is that once that game kicked off yesterday, the kit colour and what the Springboks were wearing became absolutely irrelevant. You know, it was a game of test match rugby and a World Cup, you know, a key game. And I think all of the fuss around what the Boks were wearing kind of disappeared immediately as soon as the game kicked off. So it does seem, you know, to be, you know, a lot of moaning and groaning, about very little, really. It didn't seem to impact the Springboks in any way, shape or form. But what's your take on the Boks playing in blue?
Yeah, look, it looks more turquoise and light green to me than blue, but whatever it is, it's certainly not a traditional looking Springbok jersey. So it's not something that I would necessarily want to go and buy in the shops, but luckily some sanity did prevail, because I don't know if many people realize that Scotland were due to also play in their alternate strip, which was also a white strip, and that would have caused, and they had their team photograph day before in white, and luckily some people caught wind of it and said that this is going to be a nightmare, because it's going to be a jersey clash. You wouldn't be able to easily distinguish between the teams. So luckily, sanity prevailed, and Scotland came out in their traditional navy blue, which made for a nice contrast, because the Bok jersey obviously is a lot lighter white and green or blue, whatever it is. But yeah, like you said, you know, it wasn't a talking point, because there wasn't a clash of jerseys, luckily.
Yeah.
And it's not the best looking jersey, but I also didn't really bother me that much. I mean, the jerseys change every single year in any case now, so it's not a major thing, but for a traditionalist it wouldn't suffice, I guess. I would prefer them to the old Springbok alternate kit, which was a white, all white jersey with a gold collar.
Yeah,
that obviously looks a lot better, and maybe they should have tried that, but yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah. We had England running out there looking like France as well. So yeah, kits certainly a talking point at the tournament. Look, we'll leave it there for today. This is the Inside Pass, News 24's daily dedicated Rugby World Cup podcast. We'll be back tomorrow to chat more Rugby World Cup. Cheers, all the best. I'm not afraid of the dark.